In the ballet of Swan Lake, swans are graceful creatures that float across the stage, spinning wistful magic. The species of bird known as the trumpeter swan, however, has a bit of an awkward flight style. Its voice, not wistful, but more like a goose honk. This honk is special in Iowa and all across America because it has become a symbol of wetland restoration. Today on Local Talk, we will be hearing the story of the trumpeter swan, trumpeting the cause for wetlands. Our reporter, Pat Schlarbaum, talks with conservationists Ron Andrews and David Hoffman, followed by a visit with local swan stewards Shirley Stahl and Mary Nelson.
Today on Local Talk, we're going to be discussing the trumpeter swan rejuvenation to Iowa. There'll be some featured speakers and hopefully some delightful music and sounds of the marsh. Trumpeter swans have sure made a very visible impact on our marshes here in Iowa. And today, with Ron Andrews, coordinated the trumpeter swan program for the Department of Natural Resources. Ron, what's it mean to you to see these swans here? We're located right outside Webster City at a place called Beamer's Pond with 75 to 100 swans in the area. A lot of white out today.
Exactly so, and it's a phenomenal thing. You know, I was fortunate enough to ask to be the coordinator of trumpeter swan restoration in state. They disappeared in 1883, so they were gone for a powerful long period of time.
It'd be a long time
gone. That's for sure. We started the restoration efforts in 1995. We had our first successful nest in 1998. Early goals were to see if we could get 15 breeding pairs on the landscape. We beefed that up to 25. We reached those goals early on, and last summer we actually had 55 trumpeter swans nesting in the state. But it's exciting. This is a wintering site here at Beamer's Pond, and we have had well over 250 birds here at some winters. We're not quite that high this year, I think, because of the mild conditions.
Ron, what's it mean for you to see a swan in flight?
It's absolutely phenomenal. It makes me excited, kind of sends a little thrill up my spine, so to speak. It's just a feeling of great satisfaction to know that after these birds were off the landscape for over a century, they are being able to come back, adapting to what's left of the habitat out there. And it's exciting for a lot of people. People love big white birds.
Well, and all our partners with Ducks Unlimited and numerous county conservation boards and the naturalists around the state. Tell us about some of those cooperators that had the mated pairs that were producing the young that has turned into this self-sustaining population.
Well, because of the charismatic megafauna that swans are sometimes described as, you know, they're big and they're charismatic, people wanted to help out with that Trumpeter Swan Project. You know, they said, how can we get involved? It was good PR for them, whether it's the Ducks Unlimited or whether it's County Conservation Board, or it's just private individuals. Mm-hmm. And so it looked like we needed to capitalize on that situation, and we figured out a way where we could put breeding pairs on their sites, fenced-in sites where these breeding pairs were flightless, with aeration system to keep water there in the wintertime. And as the young were produced on these sites, we took those out and scattered them across the landscape and the wetlands of Iowa. And those are the birds that really were key to the success of the current 50-plus breeding pairs in the state.
So it is a growing enterprise. How do you feel this is going to impact our Canada goose population?
I don't think it'll impact them very much. Trumpeter swans are very territorial, and it's doubtful that we'll ever get more than one or two of these pair of these birds on a particular wetland because of the territoriality. That's not to say that because they're so territorial, they actually hatch about a month after the geese, the goose,
oh,
the peak of
sure.
goose hatches occurred. That's not to say there aren't occasions no strife out there, but I think it'd be fairly minimal. I don't think they'll become, you know, people consider geese a nuisance. I don't, but people do that. I don't think they'll become that big of a problem for the public to be very, very satisfied with just seeing these big white, loud trumpeting birds. You know, gives us an opportunity to trumpet the cause for wetlands as well.
Very well spoken. How much does a trumpeter swan weigh?
The biggest birds will weigh up to 35 pounds in weight. They'll have an 8-foot wingspan. As they fly out across the countryside and over the wetlands, they look like small Cessna aircraft with a very, very graceful wing beat.
How many young?
Generally, if you get 5 or 6 hatched cygnets with each nest site out there, that's a pretty good average.
So they're essentially flightless until, later on in the summer?
Yeah, the peak hatch occurs in late May and June, and they don't really begin flight until early October. They're basically flightless. Sometimes I think they can fly, they don't realize it, but they're such a big bird that they just got to kind of build up the courage and the strength to pull themselves up.
And sometimes I do feel that they're somewhat aeronautically challenged. They don't seem to fly real high, unfortunately.
That is a problem for them because we have quite a bit of mortality where they collide utility wires, particularly on windy or foggy days, and guy wires, you know, that sort of thing out there. So that's a concern that we have, although in spite of all that, and it's not a lot, but it's still mortality out there, the birds are doing very well.
And I think you realized early on that there would be that mortality. As I recall, you were hoping just to keep stepping, keep moving forward. Ultimately, we would succeed in having trumpeter swans with us once again.
I'm suspicious that we may be right at sustainable levels now with the number of wetlands that we have. There's still some gaps out there, particularly in northwest Iowa. North central Iowa really has a bunch of birds. And we'll see them increase a little bit more. I'd really love to see them reach 100 breeding pairs in the state of Iowa. But I think it could be tough. And now we've got drought conditions, so that's going to slow us down just a little bit.
What I remember back in the 80s, during that drought, as the water levels depressed and they have that long neck for reaching down and getting into the substrate, and they were picking up a lot of the sinkers that around these areas. What is some of the main mortality in trumpeters?
Well, we mentioned utility line collisions, and there are the unfortunate poachers out there that do occasionally take a few birds out of the air, but they're not hunters. As I emphasize, they're not hunters. They're poachers. And then lead poisoning is a problem. There's still some spent lead from use of shotgun bullets with lead in many, many years ago, back in the 80s, actually. It hasn't deteriorated enough where they can't still reach down and get them. And then the fish sinkers are lead, too. So obviously we have alternative methods now for shooting waterfowl, so those alternative shells are not a problem. And we do have other alternative sinkers available on the market, but it's not as easily to take care of with those sinkers because they're sometimes very massive and just more difficult. But I think the factories will soon come up with something.
Well, it's good that the alternatives are available. And I think you mentioned the lead shot in the waterfowl areas. That was all addressed back in, as I recall, 1991.
Yes, started in the late 80s and then finalized right there in the early 90s.
Well, Ron, you mentioned the partners of the 50 cooperators, and then new partners are coming along with as these wild mated pairs are attracted to people's wetlands. We had kind of an interesting situation here at Iowa State with the research farm.
That was exciting. The research farm out there, they had an area of land that was basically just a little bit too wet to really do any row cropping, so they actually improved it and created a wetland out there. And voila, all of a sudden here we had a pair of
build it and they
swans.
Will come.
That's what,
yeah.
Build it and they will come. And they did.
Ames.
Just northwest of Ames, very neat to see that. And they were excited about it too, you know. So you got some compatibility there with the agricultural research farm. They created a wetland on a wet area of ground, and here swans showed up.
There you go. Trumpet the cause for wetlands.
You betcha. Well, you know, there's a lot of good positive things that can come from wetlands. A lot of people think they're just mosquito havens and that sort of thing, but gosh, they help protect the underground water table, keep it at a good, healthy level. They're basically Mother Nature's natural filters because polluted water that comes in the upper end of a marsh, by the time it drains out the lower end of a marsh, the pollutants are taken out by the cattails and other vegetation out there, so it'll be pretty clean water as it comes out the other end. They reduce the rapid runoff of water on the landscape, so they reduce flooding as well. So there's a lot of very positive things with trumpeting the cause for wetlands, and none the least of which doesn't include the many, many rare and endangered plants and animals that live on these areas. Mm-hmm. It's the most dynamic type of wildlife habitat out there when you compare wetlands with grasslands and woodlands. Wetland, by far and away, have more plants and animals than either of the other two.
Well, and they provide that connective link with the non-consumptive or the shorebirds, the water birds, with the waterfowl. You've really hit upon a recipe, if you will, for the myriad of wildlife that are associated with these wetlands. And if trumpeters can trumpet that cause, all the better.
You betcha. Yeah, the habitat, the connecting link, whether it's the users of the resource or whether it's a wide variety of species, it's a positive thing.
Trumpeter swans have spun their magic in many people's lives. Here at Beaver's Pond, just west of Webster City, at the edge of the KHOI listening parameters, we have trumpeter swans that are now overwintering in Iowa. This recording was made last spring with Shirley Stahl as she talks about the work of her father, Everett, and what it means to have trumpeter swans in her life. Well, and it was kind of interesting that Iowa, surprisingly enough, started picking up these overwintering swans. Yeah. It was kind of a bonus.
Yeah, it was. We've had up to 280 in this pond, but that's quite a sight.
That's good. That's a lot of white.
But we like the average. You know, the average is about 110 to 150 a year. And we have grown quite a bit because the first few years we only got 30 or some. And that. So it's been fun to watch them bring their friends in. They bring their youngins in. And the next year you've got more coming in and more and that.
How can you tell the young ones from the adults?
Well, the young ones, the first year, they're gray. They don't start turning white until, they're not fully complete white until about March or April. Oh. They'll be gray when they come in. Sometimes you can tell by the age of them, they're a little darker gray or a little lighter gray. And I assume the darker ones are ones that were born a little bit later. And the ones that have already begun to turn and are really a light gray, they have been born early in the year.
So these young swans, I guess they're referred to as cygnets, do they stay with the adults?
They do the first year. When they're here during the winter, and yeah, they'll fly out with mom and dad, and they'll leave with mom and dad. But I think they begin to push them out, the ones we've had around here. I've had like six or seven stay each year, just stay here, and then they disappear about July. But they pretty well stick with mom and dad the first year.
Oh, and you mentioned that they fly out. How far do they fly to find corn?
Well, here it's about a mile and a half or two. It's not very far. Sometimes it's just across the road in fields. It depends. They fly to find the field that has the corn and the easiest picking.
So they like it when they go through and chop the stalks.
Yeah, when they chop, yeah.
Uh-huh. And I understand out in Idaho they eat potatoes.
I don't. I've never heard that, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised. They like bread, too. Let me tell you, they do like bread. But we don't make a habit of feeding them. Only corn, and so I don't encourage public feeding of them.
Yeah. Well, they're a part of your community.
Yeah.
And who would have seen that coming 20 years ago?
Yeah, who knows that would cause a sensation in the community? And older people, seems like older people just love them.
Uh-huh.
You'd be surprised how many older people I have that come out here and sit for an hour or two. So,
well, it's hard to get too much of that.
Yes,
but look
it
at
is.
This swan coming in right now with that 8-foot wingspan.
And just glides right in there.
Yeah, had his feet down and sliding across the water. My word, they're just a sight to behold.
Yes, they are. They are very much.
Well, surely I know Everett smiling down on us with the swans. It was his work, his life's work.
Yep.
And now it's yours. Thank you for all you do for Trumpeter Swans.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I love these big white birds.
And next we're going to visit with Dave Hoffman. Dave has been a very key employee of the Department of Natural Resources in assisting with the Trumpeter Swan rejuvenation. Dave is speaking from his office at the Clear Lake area, but he has gotten around Iowa in many, many trips, delivering swans to the partners and all those NGO or non-governmental organizations.
Trumpeter swans, they nest in shallow marshes with cattail liners. They like to nest on muskrat mounds, and they'll actually take a muskrat mound that's maybe 4 foot in diameter and oftentimes build it up so it's 6 to 8 foot in diameter and nearly 2 to 3 feet high out of the water. And it's usually kind of secluded, and it's amazing how a big white bird and their cygnets or babies can be quite elusive. And quite difficult to view. Some of the big things I've seen or like to get across or is kind of neat is how people's perspective or attitudes or values have changed for wetlands. For example, things I heard growing up is everything I heard was derogatory toward wetlands, being a waste of good farmland, a place to get the tractor stuck and to grow mosquitoes. Some of that perspective is slowly changing, and we're actually seeing as a society some of the values of wetlands for our water filters, for our flood control, and for habitat, and we're seeing how valuable they are out there as well. Historically in the Prairie Powell region of Iowa, which is an area from northern Iowa that extends a lobe down to the Des Moines area. So it's mainly where most of the habitat or most of the wetlands were historically found. Approximately 35 counties, and it's a fairly flat area created by some of the last glaciers receding. Primarily where the wetlands in Iowa are located, and some of the Story County would be one of them in that Prairie Powell region.
So there was waterfowl galore, but what were the changes on the landscape?
Pioneers or the settlers coming into the state, wetlands were drained. There's estimated about 2.5 million acres of wetlands have been drained here in Iowa. So there's certainly a lot of habitat loss for waterfowl and especially trumpeter swans. Last historical nesting records in Iowa back in 1883 in Hancock County near East Twin Lake was one of the last historical nesting spots. Some of the reasons why they were lost, as we've talked about pioneers coming into the state, I often ask cool kids, where did our great-great-grandfathers get their food? Did they go to Fairway, Hy-Vee, or grocery stores to get their food? It makes people think, but our forefathers went and gathered their food from the local prairies, marshes, and trumpeter swans were, think of our forefathers going to put food on the table, or are they going to shoot a small duck, or are they going to shoot a 28-pound, 32-pound trumpeter swan? And it was certainly obvious that trumpeters were going to put more food on the table and a much more obvious choice, especially if a single-shot muzzleloader, limited amount of bullets, powder, and such, and you think of all the other things the trumpeter would provide for the family. Think of the feathers providing warmth for the swan, but it provide warmth for the settlers as for jackets, down jackets, pillows, They would use the feathers for the quill for ink pens. They even use some of the wing feathers for dusters. The breast feathers were highly prized for powder puffs. There's records that over 100,000 skins were actually exported to Europe in the late 1800s to early 1900s. So a lot of swans were not only shot for their meat, but again for their feathers, and their eggs were also gathered, being the size close to a softball, and would make a heck of an omelet for our forefathers out there on the prairie. Mm-hmm. Market hunters were also harvesting them as well.
Now, what is market hunting?
Market hunting is where people actually go out and harvest birds. Commercial gatherers, I would say, go out and harvest these species and sell them. Compared to the regular pioneer or settler on the prairie would pretty much use them, trumpeters, for their own use.
So, well, see, the settlers maybe had subsistence in mind, whereas the market hunter was, in a sense, exploiting and exporting a resource. For money.
Yep, that's correct. So some of the other demise to trumpeter swans was habitat loss, with habitat being drained, over 2.5 million acres of habitat being lost. Wetlands were very bad. It was the attitudes.
Get rid of that water.
Wetlands were a waste of good farmland. Mm-hmm. And actually that mentality still continues today. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the things I heard growing up, is the wetland in my grandpa's back 40 near Emmitsburg was a waste of good farmland. It was a place to get the tractor stuck, and it was only a good place to grow mosquitoes. So there was no good values of wetlands associated in some of our previous era.
Let's list some of the values of those marshlands in the modern landscape era.
Yeah. Since then, we recognize there's at least seven good values of wetlands. Certainly one way is their habitat for places for ducks, geese, and swans to nest. A really big one here for Iowa is their Mother Nature's water filters. They act like kidneys in our own bodies, how they filter out the bad things, the pollutants from our nutrients, our insecticides, or pesticides, or atrazine, and different things that are found in our waters. Wetlands are very important to filter those things out. And some of the results, when we lose 98% of our wetlands, it's kind of like what happens as the consequence. Can Mother Nature go on dialysis? Some of the values or functions, again, is their water filters, habitat, also recharges our groundwater. It provides recreation for canoeing, fishing. It provides stopover points for many of these birds that migrating, some of them thousands of miles, coming from the Arctic as they travel clear down south, some of those birds all the way to from the Arctic. Good stopover points or rest areas is those birds need to stop and refuel on their long journey. Another really great value is how wetlands act as a sponge. And they soak up this water after the heavy rains, and so how they aid in our flood control. They soak up the water, release that water slowly, and filter it as well. So they really help in our reducing the flooding. And we've seen some of the consequences. When we lose 98% of our flood control, how often do we get our 500-year floods? Since we've lost 98% of our water filters, what's the result of our water quality in the state? And we can see some of the consequences with greater number of water treatment plants, higher instances of nitrates, and pollutants in the water as well.
Yeah, I like to keep things in the perspective of how quickly things were lost, and in relatively short term of our careers, of things being rejuvenated and returning. That I view that as a real positive component to modern wildlife conservation. If you could kind of put us back in that back 40 in Palo Alto County, mm-hmm. when you were growing up.
Growing up in northwest Iowa, Palo Alto County, in the 1970s, it was amazing to even have a report of a deer. It was quite amazing. made the paper. Canada geese hadn't been restored to the state yet, but I remember seeing my first Canada goose in the late 70s, and it was just something awe-inspiring and just awesome to see a Canada goose. And I would have never even dreamed of a trumpeter swan being in the state in my career or my lifetime, but that has been quite amazing, the number of species that have come back from river otters, Canada geese, the deer, osprey, peregrine falcons. It's just quite amazing, some of the comebacks from where we were. Quite amazing and quite rewarding. And the other part is, I feel really appreciative of what the general public has done to accomplish those goals. And without the general public involvement, those things would not have been possible. The support financially and just the general support for the greater good of natural resources and wildlife in the state of Iowa.
Yeah, from grade school fundraisers to NGO, Ducks Unlimited, Wild Turkey Federation, Pheasants Forever, all have a habitat focus. Let's just drift into the modern era of farming, and people hear about the CRP and the Wetland Reserve. Yeah. What is your take on those type of programs?
Those programs with Wetland Reserve, the CRP, have provided a tremendous amount of habitat out there for our wildlife species in Iowa. So they've helped restore wetlands. And there is so much more that can be done, and there is so much more potential out there for areas for the Conservation Reserve Program and for the Wetland Reserve Program. Unfortunately, there is challenges with those programs. Typically, they don't compete with the price of our current day commodities of corn and beans. So there is challenges out there as far as the monetary value. They don't provide as much money, but there is some incentives, especially on areas where a producer is only getting a crop occasionally, where the land is being flooded out. And there is producers out there that just want to do the right thing and want to restore the habitat and want wildlife on their land.
Well, I understand you have a considerable number of trumpeter swan cooperators or farmers, individuals.
Yep, there is a number of cooperators here in Iowa that have helped out with restoring trumpeter swans. We had over 55 cooperators in Iowa at our peak and over 120 different cooperators nationwide back at our peak within the last 5 years. Currently, there's 33 active cooperators here in Iowa that help with restoring trumpeter swans. For example, places would be like the Grotto of Redemption in West Bend, Iowa. We have would be Jackson County Conservation Board, the Clinton County Conservation Board, and different private individuals around the state that help with providing spots for captive, permanently injured swans.
Oh, adults.
Adults. Mm-hmm. And the cygnets, or the baby swans they produce, are then released into the wild and help restore our wild trumpeter swan population here in Iowa.
Oh, I see. It's the cygnets that are the future of trumpeter swans nesting.
The cygnets, yep. And so those cooperators also help out with the trumpeter swan restoration. Other cooperators, for example, would be like Pioneer donating corn that would feed trumpeter swans. And so there's a lot of other supporters out there that donate their time and money and effort to help restore trumpeter swans here in Iowa as well.
Your work has really touched a lot of people's hearts. What do you feel when you see trumpeter swans flying over a marshland, Dave?
What I feel to see a swan flying overhead is just awe or inspiring, and just sort of like that wow factor is to see the swans, which are like the B-52 of the bird world, with an 8-foot wingspan coming winging 40 yards overhead. It's quite impressive to see a swan, or actually to see a bird of that size defying gravity and flying overhead. It's quite amazing. And the sound, the trumpet sound, and just the sights, sounds, and the experiences is quite amazing. And I encourage people to get out there to view that and partake. It's quite an experience.
Well, thank you for sharing all of your work, all of your passion. I know it extends far beyond the Canada geese and wood ducks and trumpeter swans. You're just an incredible resource in your own regard here at the Clear Lake Wildlife Research Station Day. Is there anything you'd like to share with the youth when you do programs? What do you like to impress upon them the most about swans?
There's a number of things that being involved with the youth is to sharing my passion, but also encouraging or motivating some of the things they can do to help promote, restore, and enhance not only trumpeter swans, but all wildlife and species and our natural resources in the state. Again, is that motivation and to come across what things they can do as far as wetland restoration, promoting or restoring species, promoting our water quality.
When you look around a group of kids, have you ever noticed you can see the ones that are really getting it, their eyes get big? And
yeah, you can see the ones that really get it, where they're really inspired and motivated, and they want to do the right thing out there. And so that's what I really find rewarding, is where people, the light bulb clicks in those people, and they value and appreciate, and they want to do more.
Perfect.
This year, we are seeing a number of swans nesting and new nesters, but unfortunately, our nesting and production seems to be down in 2013. For example, we had 4 out of the 5 swan nests at Union Slough National Wildlife Refuge flooded out. We also had 2 additional nests here in north central Iowa flooded out. So it's concerning to see the flooding of swan nests and the flooding we've happened this year. Our Canada goose production is down this year. Some of the weather and flooding is some of the reasons, but some of our nesting is down. But it's concerning to see our weather patterns go from drought to flooding, and to have swan nests being, or have mortality on swans due to flooding and drought even in the same year. So that is concerning with some of our weather patterns out there. Most of those reports come in from the private citizens, and that's what we encourage, is people to call and report trumpeters, swans, especially swans that are nesting and with cygnets, and helps us to keep monitor the population and see how well the swans are doing. There's also swans, few out there, with plastic neck collars, typically red collars and green or Iowa. Yellow collars are Wisconsin. 3 digits on the collar, typically 2 numbers and 1 letter. And so call and report those. They can be reported to our Clear Lake office. My name is Dave Hoffman, and our phone number is 641-357-3517. And they can be reported on the Iowa DNR website under Trumpeter Swan Reporting. And a third way is through the National Bird Banding Lab. It's 1-800-327-BAND to report trumpeter swan bands, as well as any other migratory or waterfall band, can report it to that number as well, and to their website as well.
Well, there's certainly a joy to see in the skies of Iowa over our marshlands North America's largest waterfowl back in Iowa, thanks to your efforts, Dave Hoffman. Thank you for all you do for conservation.
Thank you, Pat. And just try to stress that it's all the people of Iowa, all the individuals that have cooperated. There is no way that myself or the DNR could even do a small portion of this without all that general public support, passion, and enthusiasm out there. How many trumpeter swans, or what do we expect for trumpeter swans in the future? And part of that is a little unknown as far as the availability and the amount of habitat we have out there for trumpeter swans. It depends on how much habitat or wetlands we gain in the future or how much we lose in the future is one part of it. Mm-hmm. But typically, trumpeter swans, they can defend an area close to 40 acres in size. Some of the what we're seeing out in west, out in Yellowstone, for example. And so we really don't expect the trumpeter swan numbers to be that great because they take such a large area as far as their habitat or part of their space. So the other thing is there's certain challenges or other mortalities out there. There's problems with lead poisoning, and it depends how long that lead... Some of that lead the swans are dying from was deposited back in the 1920s. And so swans are still dying of lead, especially when we have low water levels. Those lead pellets and lead fishing sinkers are more accessible. So it's the lead, clarify, is coming from spent shot. Lead is banned in hunting waterfowl back in the 1980s. But still that lead remains down in the sediments and is still available to the trumpeter swans and other species as well. But with the trumpeter swan's long neck, they can reach down and acquire those pellets that some of our ducks and geese can't reach. So the swans are really susceptible to that, and also lead fishing sinkers. It only takes one small split shot, or it only takes four small size 4 lead pellets to actually kill a trumpeter swan. Another factor is power lines. We have shootings, illegal shootings is another. And also disease is another factor. So there has been some high mortality. I believe we're losing close to 14% of our swan population to lead poisoning each year. So some of the mortalities is quite high. So as far as populations, there's a little unknown there. What we have for availability, and it depends on how well the population growth continues. But there's also other factors, the unknowns as well. One of the encouraging things is trumpeter swans are adapting. With initial restorations, we didn't expect trumpeter swans to be out field feeding with the Canada geese in the waste grain fields. And we're actually seeing that in Iowa, but also seeing that as the swans migrate south. For example, trumpeter swans feeding in wheat fields out in Kansas. So that's encouraging with the swans adapting. And we expect more of that in the future. At Beamer's Pond and other wintering sites, we, as a part of protection for the trumpeter swans, we encourage people not to feed swans, especially due to the fact of moldy bread. Swans are really susceptible, more susceptible to any waterfowl due to the disease called aspergillosis, which can be picked up from moldy bread. It also can be found in just in our environment in the air. You notice, especially in the fall, spring, with our mold and pollen spore counts at the highest, aspergillosis is at the highest rate as well. Things people can do, we've had people say, well, how can I get trumpeter swans on my property? And there's a corny slogan for Iowa, is build it and they will come. But that also works for wetland restoration and restoring trumpeter swans. We've had a landowner ask how he can get involved and restore and have trumpeter swans on his property. One thing he did, got his land enrolled in the Wetland Reserve Program, restored some wetlands on his property. Those wetlands seem to have the best water quality and some of the best plant growth and are highly desirable to trumpeter swans. And he had swans return to his property within 3 years of actually restoring wetlands on his property. So that was quite a success. Mm-hmm. Some of the other things people can do is restore wetlands on their property, but also support wetland restorations, things like our farm bill, and some of the things that encourage wetland restoration out there is people can donate their time and money to trumpeter swan restoration. We've had kids ask, what can we do? We talk about even picking up litter from fishing line or the plastic six-pack ring containers that can get wrapped around a swan's neck or other wildlife so they can pick up litter. They can choose to use non-toxic fishing sinkers.
That's a good one.
And they can, which can help prevent the lead poisoning of swans and other species. So again, they can do is report poachers and vandals, or those knuckleheads out there that might harm or shoot a trumpeter swan or any other protected species out there.
There's hope. You know, among all the environmental challenges, there are certain species now that can kind of guide the way, just inspire us to do more and to become better stewards of our natural resources. It's just
encourage, motivate, inspire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're trumpeting the cause for wetlands.
Trumpeting the cause for wetlands.
And it will continue.
The swan rejuvenation in Iowa has required a lot of assistance from swan stewards around the state. One of those wonderful people to work with is Mary Nelson from Boone. Mary's been raising swans for the project for the last decade or so and continues to be a very strong advocate for trumpeter swans across America. Mary Nelson, how are you today?
I'm fine.
And Mary, I understand you have elevated your wildlife interests to rearing trumpeter swans. How many years have you been raising swans?
Since 2000, I got my first pair of swans.
How were you able to obtain mated pairs of swans?
I bought mine over the internet, looking up swans and people who raise birds. I got mine from Kenneth Howell down in Oklahoma, and he shipped them up in a large pet carrier in February of 2000, and they were 3 years old at that time. And I contacted the post office and told them that was happening, and post office called one morning and said, "Your swans are here, Mary." And I went up and picked them up, turned them loose here in the cold February, and they survived and did well and eventually made it.
You have a pond?
I have a pond. This originally started raising some Canada geese in the early 90s, and one thing always leads to another, that you've got some grass and stuff for them to eat. But you really need water for them to have little ones and just for their habitat. So ended up in 98 having a pond dug out there. And I looked around at different places to see, you know, lay of the land and soils and everything like that that you get into when you're pond building. But I find that talking to other people who raise swans that they're are very few perfect places for swans, because if the pond is too big, then there's not enough duckweed or different tubers for them to eat because it's too big. And so they like the more shallower type water where they can get the roots and things like that.
What keeps the water from freezing over winter?
I put an aerator in there. This one I've got right now has a little fan on it, and it helps keep docks free from ice, and it keeps the water open in the winter so they can have some protection, because water is protection as well as food for the swans.
When do they start their nesting behavior?
I see it usually in April, and it's not always the female that makes the nest. She might choose the site, but the male will help gather up materials for the nest, and I always put out some different straw and stuff for them to help with their nest building, because they make big nests, swans do. They can be 6 feet across and bigger than that sometimes.
What is the behavior that you notice? Your pair were brought here as unmated?
Aggressiveness sometimes in the springtime towards other birds, and they're very territorial. They don't like Canada geese in their area, and they will even kill them if they can get them. They'll stand on them on top in the water. They're a big bird. I think sometimes swans can weigh up to 30 pounds, and they have a wingspread that's 8 foot long there that when you see them flying, they're just huge. But
they're easily agitated.
They do a lot of talking, posturing. It's quite loud. One will talk and the other one will answer in the same tone. Swans are bonded and pair up together. They'll mimic that, and then when they're agitated, they'll face each other, flap their wings, and just honk away, trumpet away with that. They have a red on their bill. It seems to be a little more colorful in the springtime than other times of the year. Also, they do flap their wings or just gently move them. I think it's part of their posturing.
How long do they incubate their eggs?
Close to 34 days, 32, 34 mm-hmm. days.
Does the male assist with that activity?
No, He guards the female on the nest, and she will get off the nest maybe once or twice a day and take a swim. She usually doesn't eat that much. Then she'll get back on the nest, and she'll turn her eggs, and the moisture from her feathers gives some moisture to the eggs and help them with their incubation.
And how many eggs would they normally lay?
I've heard as high as 7. Mostly it's 5 or 6 eggs they will lay. They don't always hatch at once. You'll get 1 or 2 that'll hatch, and they're very weak and takes a while for them to get their legs underneath them. They can be in the water in 24 hours, 48 hours.
Okay.
They get dried off and everything from hatching out of the egg. They don't always stay in the water constantly. She'll bring them back on shore and let them dry out, and they'll go underneath her wings. And
where's the male during this activity?
He's with them. He'll kind of lead the way, and he just stands guard and helps to guide them to food, and so they can find food in the water too.
The cob, or is that what a male?
Yeah, male swan is a cob, and a female is a pen.
And what are the little ones called?
Cygnets.
Well, it's quite a sight you described.
Yes.
Well, what is it about raising swans that you enjoy the most?
Well, they're a big, beautiful bird. You have to admire their protectiveness, their territorialness. They're just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. That's just fun to see them, to be up close and personal to them, and that's what I enjoy.
Do you have family members and neighbors that come by?
Yeah. There's people that will drive by the road, and they'll kind of keep track of what the swans are doing or the other birds out there, too.
Well, how did that come about, that you extended your stewardship into wildlife?
Well, just have an acreage here. And someone suggested to me, well, why don't you raise some Canada geese? You'll just love them. They imprint on you, and they're a nice bird, they're a tough bird, and everything like that. So that's what started it. Then I found the trumpeter swans and became involved with Ron Andrews and Dave Hoffman with the Swan Restoration Program, and just have learned a lot over the years. I belong to the Trumpeter Swan Society and have been to some different conferences with that, and there's a lot of issues with swans, but I enjoy finding out as much as I can about the species.
So there's an international conference?
Well, there'll be an international conference next February in Chesapeake Bay area, looking at tundra swans and probably some mute swan issues there. Mm-hmm. The Trumpeter Swan Society is hosting that. But there's issues with power lines with swans. Swans, when they fly, are low-flying birds. They don't get up high as like Canada's and your ducks do. And if you ever see them flying, they just look like big airplanes out there flying low.
Yeah.
They're so huge.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They can wrap their necks around those power lines and get into problems that way.
Are they marking those power lines?
They put, you'll see different. Well, they have different kinds of either balls or that they put around the wires, or kind of flapper things to help so the swans can see those power lines and not run into them. Then there's lead poisoning issues out there, especially out west. Well, you see it back here, too. I've seen it with bald eagles over at Iowa State. They will get birds that have lead poison.
How do trumpeter swans get lead?
The way they eat in the water, they will get down close to the floor of the pond or lake or streams, and they'll pick up lead shot from hunting. They can also pick up lead sinkers from fishing lines and things like that, too. And once they get that in their system, in their gizzard that helps crunch and digest all their food up, that puts lead poisoning into their system. I haven't heard of too many birds that really survive lead poisoning. It's what I've seen with eagles and swans that they just die. And Washington State especially has a lot of issues with lead poisoning out there. If I have learned anything from my experience in raising birds, it is habitat. I mean, we all know that, but to really be involved in it and see it, the wetlands, water quality, the food that they eat with the wetlands. Of course, there's, you know, always the farming industry, which is important. And it's nice that the farmers do have some ponds and stuff for the swans and other waterfowl. Habitat is, I think, the most important thing.
What is it you would like to share with the people with your swan work?
I guess I would encourage them to become involved. And even if you think you can't raise birds or have the opportunity to, there are ways you can support groups that people raise birds for their habitat and everything. To take the courage to go out and raise these birds on your own, or it takes guts sometimes and you deal with a lot of challenges, but it is very well worth it to do that. Some little way you're bringing back the swans to Iowa. Some of the cygnets that I have raised, I know there's one that's up in Anchorage, Alaska at a zoo. Others have been turned loose and are out doing their swan thing in Iowa and surrounding states. A lot of satisfaction with that.
Well, and you've been a very key partner with the Trumpeter Swan Work here in Iowa. And I'm sure your coworkers are tuned into.
They get lots of pictures to look at, and I've kind of known as Mother Goose at work, but I, you know, always bring in swan pictures and of the cygnets, and they're just a precious bird. The little ones are. They're so soft. They're gray. They have little pink bills and pink feet, and it's darn cute.
Yeah.
I know the Trumpeter Swan Society supports research and dealing with issues with swans. Like I say, it's challenging, but it's fun.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
This has been the story of Trumpeter Swans, a production of Local Talk on KHOI Radio 89.1 FM. Thank you to all of our guests on the program, Ron Andrews, David Hoffman, Shirley Stahl, and Mary Nelson. Our reporter on this story is Pat Schlarbaum. Producers, Pat Schlarbaum and Stephanie Schubert. The music selection is Baccarino Cello Concerto No. 9, performed by Yo-Yo Ma and Pinchas Zuckerman.
You can also listen to this show and all other past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.